96 WFAN.
Sal Licata back on the fan, 877-337-6666. We'll take your calls in a few. Right now, we're going to talk some Knicks. Mike Borkanoff of The Athletic. Mike, I appreciate you taking a couple minutes here. So what happened? Can you clear this up with the Knicks fan getting the season ticket request with the picture of Kevin Durant involved in that? You know the latest on that saga?
Well, I didn't expect that to be something this weekend. I guess they were using it, and then I think they apologized for not using it, considering everything that's going on. That was the latest I saw on Twitter this weekend, and I was like, oh, man, if this thing's a story, I got to get off Twitter.
And it is. I saw some tweets, obviously, before the show here, so it was a little bit of a story. Everybody's trying to make a big deal. Well, Mike, here's the problem. I mean, you're watching a team that's 10-45. I don't know how you do it. I haven't paid attention to this team in years the way that I used to in the mid-90s. They have been bad for 18 years, and this may take the cake. 10-45, they've lost 16 in a row. It's all about Kevin Durant and the future at this point, is it not?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's definitely fair. This is probably going to be the worst team in franchise history, the 10-45. They need 7 more wins to tie the franchise record for fewest wins in a season. It's hard to see that going to happen. And, yeah, it's now without Kristaps Porzingis. Now it's what happens with their cap space in July, what happens with their lottery pick in May and June. And so they've put themselves into this corner, and so I get why why everyone is thinking that way. It's only fair, really. It seems like that's kind of the way they pointed their direction, their franchise as well, into that direction. So it's really the only conversation piece, because there's absolutely no reason to talk about the actual team on the floor anymore.
Well, let me ask you one thing, at least one thing about the current team on the floor, and I'm not going to get into the specifics of the players and bore everybody to tears. Do you believe, Mike, that Fizdale is the right guy to be here to turn things around?
You know, it's hard to say, because I don't think we've learned that much about him this year. You know, he's been so devoid of talent and players that it's hard to judge his offense or his defense. I think he's been a very good culture setter, and that's what the Knicks partially hired him for, was to put in the type of environment that would make them not only a winning team, but one that's one that other players and other people want to be a part of, right? And, you know, the record is atrocious, obviously, and, you know, it'll go down under David Fizdale's ledger. But I'm just not sure what kind of coach he actually is, because I don't think he's been given much of an opportunity, really, to coach. Basically, he's trying to survive this year, it seems like, rather than try to create some kind of ecosystem where everyone can thrive.
Well, I mean, that's his whole thing, is what he's been saying, is they want to build the culture here, and they want to do it the right way. And again, I'm you know, watching, as you mentioned, maybe the worst season in the history of the franchise, so that's tough to take. I want to know if there's some positives in Fizdale. Now, you're bringing up some good points. Hard to evaluate him, but at least if he's changing the culture, do you feel a difference in this team, in the environment, in the locker room, than in years past, or is this just the same old stuff with you know, different quotes from a different head coach?
Look, I mean, it feels different. Fizdale will tell you himself that it's different, but there's only so much you can take from him, because he and the rest of the Knicks are the ones who are trying to tell you that the team has changed, that the reputation league-wide has changed. They're the ones who are trying to convince you of what the situation is rather than what it might really be. But, yeah, it seems like they bought into him. The players, it seems like everyone is happy and positive to be here, and I guess maybe that's different than the last 2 years under Jeff Hornacek, or maybe it's not. I mean, you know, the thing that's hard to really reconcile is that even if the Knicks have changed kind of their direction and they've changed the basic working competencies of the organization, and, you know, even where the future is heading, they couldn't convince the best player under their roof in Kristaps Porzingis to believe in their direction and their long-term plan. And he wanted to get out, you know, and so it's hard to reconcile those two things and really just kind of, you know, both things are true right now. Maybe they're changing, but then again, they couldn't impress the star they had under their roof.
Talk about Mike Vorkanoff of The Athletic covering the Knicks. Okay, well, why then should we believe, if KP didn't believe in the organization, why should we believe in Mills and Perry?
I mean, look, if you're a Knicks fan, you've been a Knicks fan for this long, why give up now, right, when you've got $70 million of cap space staring at you and wherever this draft pick's going to be?
but they need to make the right. I mean, they need to A, lure the free agents here. B, get the right free agents, obviously two of the big guys, and I'm talking big guys. And then B or C, make the right draft pick with whatever pick that they end up getting.
Oh yeah, listen, I think right now it's just kind of hope and taking that leap of faith. I don't know that they've done anything so far in their, you know, year and a half together as head of the Knicks organization where you can definitively point to and say, okay, these guys have done X well, and so we can trust them going forward. You know, that right now you're just kind of hoping that they've put themselves in a good situation, and that should be enough to carry them forward. And I think if you know, I think the Kristaps Porzingis trade was debatable. I think that there was a reason or a few reasons why they shouldn't have made it, but if you're on the side that they should have traded him because he didn't want to be there, you know, they got to get rid of Tim Hardaway contract, they got rid of Courtney Lee's contract, and they got two future first-round picks and all this cap space out of it. So now it's, what did they do with it? I don't know. We'll see. That's a big question now. We're left in a position, basically, that you think the Knicks are going to succeed because they've at least put themselves in this point, and that's really the reason to be optimistic going forward.
Before we get to what could come in the future and what has to come for this team to be relevant, how about what they have? You like Dennis Smith Jr., what you've seen so far from him?
I think he's an interesting prospect. You know, he's 21. He's in his second season. He's got a lot of athleticism. He's an explosive leaper, and he's, you know, he can really get to the basket a lot. There's a lot of things about his game that need work in terms of his decision-making and his jump shot. But he's an interesting guy to take a flyer on. You know, he's got talent. I think that's for sure. And, you know, now you put on your coaching staff and your development staff to make it work. If the Knicks are in a place next year too, where he's even the starting point guard.
Well, right. I mean, in an ideal world, they'd have, let's say, Kyrie Irving, and then you wouldn't have to worry about it. How about the other guys from this team who have the potential to stay? Mitchell Robinson, yes. I mean, Moutier is going to be a goner, I'm assuming, now with the acquisition of Dennis Smith Jr. Neil Aquina is still going to be here. You believe he has a future here with this team. How do you think the current roster with, you know, guys who really are borderline NBA players, how do you see some of them shaping up being a part of this future next year?
Oh, I think there's definitely talent on the team. You know, Kevin Knox is a foundational piece for them. He's only 19. He has shown this year already that he can be a high-volume scorer down the road and did it on occasion already. You know, the question with him is really what else can he do, and can he develop into a strong enough defender, rebounder, high enough motor type of guy? But that's hard to project at 19 years old. But I think the talent is there. Mitchell Robinson, I think, has been impressive at 20, you know, and especially for a second-round pick. He's already one of the league's elite shot blockers, and that in and of itself is pretty good for a 20-year-old. You got it at number 36. Will the offense come around? I don't know, but I think he can be good enough defensively where he matters and where he's a good player on a good team. And Frank Ntilikina, also 20 years old, has shown that he belongs in the NBA from the defensive standpoint. Now it's, will his offense come around? But I think those three guys are, you know, worthy of getting attention, worthy of building around. They might not be able to contribute to winning right away or maybe even next year, but I think long-term, the potential is there.
Talk about Mike Vorkanoff of The Athletic covering the Knicks. All right, well, how about the guys who could potentially be here? Do you think it's realistic, Mike, for the Knicks fan to dream about adding Kevin Durant, about adding Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, somebody, two of those three players in particular? You think that's realistic at this point?
Sure. Why not? You know, I'm not trying to be flippant about it, but it just, they've been tied into Kevin Durant basically all season long. I mean, you talk to different people around the league. Some people think he's coming, some people don't. And it's kind of hard not to, I don't know, basically analyze the situation without pure conjecture, right? Because we don't know for sure. There hasn't been anything stated publicly. and you kind of have to read the tea leaves a little bit, but I don't think it's crazy anymore. And that in itself is kind of a win for the Knicks, where they're in a place compared to where they were in the last Phil Jackson season, where, you know, nobody is laughing at the idea that they could sign one of these superstars.
Well, let me ask you, Mike, what has changed? I mean, let's forget even Phil Jackson. We know the Phil was bad, but before that, 2010, right, when LeBron was a free agent and Stoudemire and Bosch and all that stuff, and the Knicks were hoping to get Joe Johnson, Knicks were hoping to land the big fish then, and obviously they didn't. They got Amari, and that was basically it. Everybody's going to be happy with that. What has changed now to where you'd say, yeah, this is a desirable spot? They don't even have Porzingis anymore. So what would draw the top free agents here when they could get more money elsewhere other than just the city in New York?
I think it's kind of like a regression to the mean to where New York has always been as a free agent destination, right? They're a little bit like Los Angeles in that they're always a contender for these big name stars. The Lakers at least got them over the years frequently. The Knicks never did. But, you know, whereas under the last year of Phil Jackson and last year, like, they just, you know, there's just so much embarrassment and controversy surrounding the organization. They couldn't even put themselves in the conversation. Now they're back into a place because of the relative calm under Steve Mills and Scott Perry, where they're getting back thrown into every conversation with Durant, with Kyrie Irving, with whoever it may be. Does that mean they're going to sign them? I don't think that's like a guarantee, but at least they're in talks now, like they were in 2010, where you can kind of float their name around a free agent. You couldn't even do that 2 years ago because the things had gotten so bad. If you remember, Carmelo Anthony himself, you know, who's their star, who's feuding basically with the team president, said there was a cloud around the organization when it came to signing free agents. At least that is gone right now. And so now they can be put into this conversation.
How about Anthony Davis? Knicks have enough to get him. Can they match what the Lakers, what the Celtics will be able to give if the trade is in fact going to happen over the course of the summer?
I think if they land the number one pick, and that puts them in the, you know, the pole spot to get Zion Williamson, that's as good a singular asset as I think any team can throw out there, depending on how you feel about Jason Tatum. You know, it's probably, you know, Zion Williamson or Jason Tatum is the top singular asset that any team can use to try to lure Anthony Davis. The difference is that the Celtics, if they want, if they're willing, can then throw a bunch more picks onto their offer. Marcus Smart, you know, the rights to Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown, like all these guys. I think the Knicks offer kind of thins out after Zion Williamson. But if the Pelicans decide that, you know, he's so good and that they want him to be their future and that they want him to sell tickets in New Orleans, maybe that's what that wins them over.
You know, to me, Mike, the Knicks need three. They need Durant, and again, three of them, Durant, Davis, Kyrie, or the top pick. Now, if they were to trade for Davis, they're not going to have the top pick. They probably wouldn't have Knox and, you know, maybe not Dennis Smith Jr. or whatever else. I need to find a way to get three of those big assets, big players on the team. One they had with Porzingis, they got rid of him. So one will be the top pick. Can they turn him into Anthony Davis? Sure. But then are they going to be able to get two other guys here? I don't know if the best way would be, in fact, to trade that number one pick for Anthony Davis. They got to figure out a way, to me, to get three of the big ones. And I don't want to end up with Kemba Walker. And I like Kemba Walker, but come on, you can't end up with him. They need to figure out a way to make that happen. You think it's realistic? We don't know if it's going to happen or not. Nobody knows, as you said, at this point. But at least they're in a position to where they can think and dream about possibly getting that.
Yeah, you know, I kind of went into some of the possible outcomes for the Knicks this summer on theathletic.com the other day. And, you know, I think I'm with you in the sense that the outcome you want to avoid is the Amari Stoudemire outcome, right, where you spend money in free agency because you couldn't get the top guys, and so you sign someone like DeMarcus Cousins or Kemba Walker, kind of a sub-elite type of player, someone who's still really good, but you're devoting lots of cap space to. You know, if they can get Durant and Kyrie and Anthony Davis or the number one pick, that's utopia for the Knicks, right? Whichever way that works out, you've hit the jackpot. I think in a realistic situation, even if you just get the number one pick and you're willing to commit to a slow growth where you get Zion Williamson and in free agency, you kind of build around on the edges, maybe you use your money and you try to sign a younger type of player like Tobias Harris to a big contract. Even that would be, I think, a good offseason. The problem is where you try to max out Tobias Harris and then another free agent who's not exactly worth a, you know, I don't know, the type of money that would make you a contender with the best teams in the East. That's when it becomes dangerous, and that's what the Knicks have to avoid, which is kind of replicating the problems they've had in the past, which is using the cap space that they had, the money they had, but spending on the wrong people and then putting themselves back into a corner. And that, to me, would be the real question of growth for the Knicks this year is what happens if they don't get Durant and they don't get Kyrie Irving, and will they have enough willpower to not just waste all the cap space and money they have?
Right, and if they don't, you still think Mills, Perry, Fizdale, that trio is going to have enough time here, 3, 4, 5 years to rectify this thing, even if they don't have a huge free agent offseason?
I think that they should if they don't make any huge errors in lieu of that. I think that there's nothing wrong with growing slowly and, you know, around young players like Knox and Robinson and Ntilikina and whoever their draft pick is and, you know, using their cap space to acquire more assets. I think that the expectations for their summer are so high now, in part, you know, because they set their expectations there, starting with what Steve Mills was saying last summer, if you remember last June, about how they would have the room and expect to be in play for a star player. I think they should get the opportunity. Will that be the case? I don't know. Everything's not super predictable at the Garden, as we've seen historically.
Yeah, really.
I'm never comfortable predicting what will happen at Madison Square Garden with the Knicks.
Well, one thing that you could predict is losses. I mean, that's been happening consistently for 18 years or so. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me.
Mike Vorkin off of The Athletic. I mean, it's been predictable for the Knicks, the results, the last 18 years or so. I still can't believe it. 10-45. I mean, there was a time, I say this almost every show now, there was a time in my life, young Sal, 14, 15-year-old Sal in the mid-90s, where I would have said to anybody who asked, the Knicks missed the playoffs in my lifetime? That'll never happen. Missed the playoffs? That was, come on. The Knicks making the playoffs was a foregone conclusion. It was 50 wins plus. It was home court in at least the first round. It was probably going 2-3 rounds deep every year. Now, you're talking almost 20 years later. And if they don't hit big this summer, it's going to be another, you know, decade of futility. Can't wait for that.